What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 253 of the PS4 Blogcast. I'm JCM. With us this week is Isley.
Yo.
And Messiah is away. She has a sick cat she has to take care of, so she will not be here this episode. So I figured this episode, since the news is super light and there's never that much nowadays because it's so post E3, Isley did end up playing two video games, a new game and a relatively old game, with Wolfenstein The New Order and also playing Horizon. And you've since beaten both of them. So I figure we can get into discussions about them and basically be obviously spoiler talked, because we had never had an official spoiler cast for Wolfenstein The New Order, nor did we have one for Horizon, because when I beat it, neither of you had played it. So
I beat the story for Horizon. I've yet to actually get all of the shit done, though.
Oh, well, that's fine. I mean, we just won't talk about that, like the collect the viewpoint side stuff or any of those side things there. I mean, the only thing that has additional stuff on the end would be if you didn't do all five cauldrons, and then if you didn't do all the viewpoints in the storyline there. But
so yeah. I've gotten all the cauldrons done. I don't think I've done all the vantage points.
Yeah, the vantage points are it's the only thing that has story to them. The other stuff doesn't, like the flowers, and they have like data messages, but they don't actually mean anything. But yeah, so we can talk about this. So we'll start with the older one, The New Order. Did you play the DLC, or did you just play the main game?
I did not play the DLC, just the main game.
Ah, damn, I was hoping you would have played the DLC.
So the deal on PSN when it was for $10, I apparently thought the final day, i.e. the 20th, it would still be $10, but apparently when they said it ran until the 20th, what they meant was it ended on the 20th, or it ended on the 19th, and the minute it changed to the 20th, it was over, so I missed that.
Yeah, you gotta look at the end date and see if the 11:59 p.m. is the day before or the actual day that it is. You gotta double check and be like, oh, it's over. It's like, no, actually, it looks like I have an extra day, or I thought it was gonna be this day, but it's actually the night prior.
Yeah, so I missed that one, but I played New Order. I drowned a Nazi in a toilet.
Yep. And so what'd you think of the game overall?
It was probably one of the best first-person shooters I've played in a really long time. I kind of hate first-person shooters. I haven't played a ton of them recently, just because typically, I don't know, I get bored of them. Either they don't have personality or character, or they're just kind of either, you know, they're copy-paste run-of-the-mill shooters, or they just don't have any bit of an interesting story. So when you originally played Wolfenstein, I never picked it up, because it seemed like the shtick was just, you know, oh, isn't this game so funny? You can kill Nazis. You get to kill a bunch of super powerful Nazis in a bunch of different ways. And that just didn't sound interesting to me. Yes, killing Nazis would be awesome, but it didn't seem like it was going to be even remotely interesting. And then I played the game, and I was surprised that I actually cared about the characters. I was surprised that it actually has a pretty good story. Like, it's kind of a satire parody joke story, but it's actually still pretty good. And then the gunplay in it is phenomenal. So I ended up loving it. Whereas I went in thinking that it would, you know, for $10, I thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'll play it for a little bit. If it's, you know, just another shooter I hate, I'll drop it and never come back to it. And then I played like 8 hours of it the first day and beat it the second day, basically.
Yeah, that game's real good. I'm blanking on the voice actor's name, but I love that voice actor. He just, anytime BJ has an inner monologue, it's just great. I just love the way he talks, and it's just, that voice actor's so good. He's also the main character in the new Call of Duty, which is why I wanted to play that campaign, because it's the same guy. Obviously, he won't have that same effect, but I like that voice actor a lot. So I'm looking forward to definitely the next Wolfenstein game. But yeah, Wolfenstein was definitely a super fantastic shooter. From Machine Games, of course, but I loved it when it came out, and then I replayed it not too long ago, and then when you said you played it, I'm like, okay, I gotta have to replay this game again, that and the DLC before the next game comes out, so I'll probably do it later this summer. But yeah, that game is just, it's so fun. I love it a lot.
I mean, the upgrade system was fun. The levels, you can actually, for a linear game, you can actually explore the levels quite a bit.
Yeah, there are a lot of paths. Like, sneak around, you can go full on, guns out. I love those, just dual wielding those auto shotguns. Just fucking tearing shit up.
Of course, Of course you'd be that person.
Well, that's usually like when shit breaks loose and anytime it's like, oh, there's officers. Okay, I'm going to sneak, take out the officers. I usually am quiet all the way through and I hoard all my ammo. And then it's like, all right, shit just went down. Okay, I'm going to try to funnel these guys to this back hallway and then just akimbo auto shotguns and just fucking go to town. It's just so good. And I love how you can just easily swap between dual and single, so you can ADS if you need to. But yeah, I love this little torch tool mechanic they had in that game.
Then by the end, it gets upgraded into a badass laser that one-shots almost everything.
Yeah. It's fun using that. And there's one of my favorite sequences is when you're running away from one of the mechanical dogs and you have to cut your way through some stuff before he gets you. So it's like, yeah, this time limit. It's like, man, it's so tense. Like, come on, go, 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 go. It's like, cut it, cut it, cut it. But and then the fight with the London Monitor.
That was a cool fight.
Yeah. Dropping underground, refilling your ammo, getting back up, shooting it in the weak point for massive damage. But there's one part in the game that really annoyed me because you have to jump perfectly. And it's after you destroy the bridge and then you jump back onto the helicopter. You have to jump off the last pixel of that ledge in order to make that jump to the helicopter. And so if you jump too soon, it looks like, oh, I'll make it. He'll just grab the edge and pull himself up. I was like, no, you miss. And with the first time I played that game, I missed four times. I was like, oh, why do I have to jump right at the very edge?
I think they might have patched that because I remember that part and I jumped and it is a cutscene now where you jump and then you get remotely close and it's a cutscene and they pull you in.
Okay, so now they pull you in. Yeah, back in the day it was it was so annoying because then you jump and if you didn't land inside the helicopter, it's you just fell to your death. And I'm like, oh my God, why did you do this? And that was the only problem I had with that game was that one from a gameplay
section. Yeah, they don't. Section. They've evidently patched that out because I know exactly which part you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's an automated, not really, not the cutscene. You still have to make the jump yourself. But when you get close, the cutscene takes over and they pull you in. So I'm going to guess they patched it because the chances of me getting a jumping thing right on my first try are zero, since that's usually what I fuck up most in games, even though I love platformers. So I think they probably patched it since then.
And I love watching the speed runs for Wolfenstein. Somebody was damn, you see them do stuff and and usually a lot of it's not, it's just exploiting physics or going down some path that you would never think. It's all the standard things, but it's not a super short speed run like Prey. It's it takes about, I think, an hour still.
It's not 7 minutes.
Yeah, the Prey one's 7 minutes, but no, it's an hour long speed run to get through because it still takes a bit to go through stuff.
Is it a glitch speed run or is it a?
It's a glitch speed run if I remember correctly. It was a while back that I watched it. I didn't watch all of it, but I watched the majority of it just to see oh, what's this? But I forget what platform they played on. Probably PC because most speed runs are done on PC. But yeah, I liked Wolfenstein a lot. It was also one of the only instances in either a game or a movie where the romance between the characters felt okay, it was acceptable to me. I always said, I don't know why.
Their first meeting is them screwing.
Well, they don't necessarily. Well, they. I wouldn't necessarily.
They absolutely.
I wouldn't call that their first meeting, because it's when they're on the train's not when they first meet.
Technically when they first meet is in the hospital where he's being kept for, 14 years? Something like that?
Yeah, he was there for a long time.
But the first time they get, private moment back to themselves, they go back and screw. Which is, I was that's probably the most realistic thing that would happen in this scenario.
But it just, something about, I don't know if it was just the voiceover of him talking, but it just felt more genuine. I always hate it. For some reason, movies, I get so annoyed with romantic scenes in movies where it's like, oh, now we're going to, something happen. Okay, now they just happen to be alone. They haven't known each other that long. Okay, time to make out. And
Never watched The Honeymoon then.
Never watched what?
The Honeymoon. It's the worst movie I've seen in a long time. It has one of the worst romances I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, usually I guess the only movie recently that I thought actually did it well, I suppose, would be Wonder Woman. Well, there's a lot that, like, it seems like they're gonna kind of, but they at least they build that relationship, those characters, for a good portion of the film before they actually get it, and then they just kind of skip it over. Like, they kiss during the dance, or in the, they don't kiss during the dance. They, like, they kiss in the room, and then it just kind of goes away, and it's just implied. And I like that either if something happens and it just cuts, because watching it's like, this doesn't, watching these people make out and everything and undress each other, it just doesn't add to the narrative. Like, I get it. That's why, like, in, like, Lucky Number 11, it just kind of quickly glosses over, and there's some, like, giggling banter between Josh Hartnett and Lucy Liu. And then it just kind of cuts to them the next morning. Or, like, it's in the, it's right after they, you know, they do it, and then they cut back to a conversation they had after they went to dinner. And so there's some character building there. So that made sense. It's more like skipping over that whole thing. But just usually I feel like a lot of movies and stuff just do it poorly. But I feel like...
Well, yeah, they got an hour and a half to make you believe that they're falling in love.
Well, it's not even falling in love. Like, people that don't fall in love, they just, like, do it. It's like that whole, oh, we were in a perilous situation. And I, you know, I guess that happens in real life. I've never, like...
Clearly, you've never been in a perilous situation with an attractive woman, Jason.
Right, and then have the adrenaline, I guess, make you suddenly go... We just lived and killed a bunch of people. Oh, let's make out and do it. Like, I've never been in that situation, so I don't know. It could very well be a chemical thing that happens, but it's just so cliched, I guess, at this point.
Let me put it this way. I was in an airport. Well, they thought it was someone shooting up an airport. It turned out it was just somebody that crashed their car.
Right.
Through the glass. Right. With my girlfriend. Yeah. And we didn't go back and have sex. We went back, and all she wanted to do was drink wine and go to bed. Yeah. So, clearly, the adrenaline was not running there.
Yep. And you're like, damn. Is that
clearly, that was not how it actually played out.
In the movies, it plays out totally different. But yeah, Wolfenstein is fantastic. I love that game a lot. Especially the whole lore and the world building and all the tech stuff. Like, I love how it kind of explained, like, because it starts out, you're like, you see the London Monitor, you're like, what the fuck? It's like, clearly this is obviously going to be alternate universe or alternate timeline. And you see these mechanical dogs, you're like, what the hell is going on? And then it's like, you find out later, it kind of explains it, like they stole our tech from the Jews. But
I love that the Jews had a secret, like, cult sect that worshipped technology that was, like, hundreds and hundreds of years in the future, or like ahead of everybody else. I just, when they revealed that in the storyline, I was laughing my ass off.
Yeah, that doctor, he's a doctor, right? The one you get out of the prison.
Yeah.
I like that character a lot. I love that whole plan they had where they corrupt the ingredient for the super concrete to give it the mold that's infecting the city and allows the buildings to crumble and everybody's getting sick from the mold.
I wish that actually went a bit further. Because they do that, but the mold thing kind of takes a back seat. Like, it was kind of like they focus on the plan B and they hint at the plan B a lot, but then plan A works. So you don't need to worry about plan B.
Well, it seems more like that was just a long con. Like, this is something like, we did this, to cause this problem, but it's going to take a while to get there. And it's like, that's still going, so. But, yeah, I the end of that game, too, is great when he's reciting the poem New Colossus on the edge of that cliff as everybody's getting evacuated. That's why the New Colossus showed up in the next one, because they were based off the poem. But
part of me wishes I played, well, not part of me, a big part of me really wishes I played this when it came out originally, because then the ending, I'm curious what my reaction would have been. Since the game ends with him getting blown up, and then at, like, the after credits cutscene, you see, like, him blink, or, like, it looks like he's blinking or something like that. Like, you see a flash of the game come back, and then it cuts to black. I wish I had played it when it first came out, and I didn't know that he was still alive, so that I could have experienced what my reaction would have been in that scenario.
Wait, there was a... Hold on. Wolfenstein, the New Order, end credits. I don't remember it.
Basically, it's like ends with the grenade going off.
Right. That said. I'm watching the credits. I don't remember anything popping up after the credits, though. It just says Wolfenstein, then goes to black. I'm watching the credits right now. Where did you
unless see? That was patched in recently too. It's the credits play, then like
then it says Wolfenstein the New Order.
I don't remember when it says Wolfenstein the New Order, but
at the very end, and then it just fades to black. I'm watching the credits right here.
And then there's like flashes back to the game, like it. Hold on, let me see if I can find it too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, here's that speed run. The world record speed run, according to this YouTube, I don't know how old this YouTube video is, an hour 31. So it still takes a while to do the Wolfenstein speed run. But yeah, I really like the music of Wolfenstein as well. That was the first time I was aware of. I didn't know his name, but like his music, obviously Mick Gordon, who then went on to work for the Doom soundtrack. And then he also did Prey, and now he's going to be doing, I'm hoping, Wolfenstein, The New Colossus. But yeah, he does, I really like his music. We talked about it off the podcast, but that main theme when you boot it up, like, I always thought, like, man, it's so generic, this music, and it's okay, get it heavy. But then it's like later when I actually listen to it on headphones, and I can hear all the different stuff, all the layers of music in there, I'm like, this is really good. Like, this is great. One of my other favorite tracks is, I love the end credit song. It's just called End. And then I also love the other one called, I think it's called, oh, where the heck is my phone? I think it's called Concrete, not Concrete Jungle, but I think it's just called Concrete for Miles. Let me find it real quick. Albums? Nope, I want my recently added. I'm going to go on a tangent. The one thing I hate about iTunes sometimes on iPhone anyways is that if I buy a song, like, so I went to go look at the John Wick 2 soundtrack because I wanted to buy a couple songs off it, and I buy it one at a time. But because it does that thing where it's the same album, but it's different composers, I guess, like different artists that do the songs, it splits them in my iPhone library.
Here, I'm going to interrupt you. I found the
send me a link.
Thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, shoot me it in Skype. I want to watch this. I just watched this one, and this one was posted up 3.
You'll have to watch it later. So it's not like the blink, the screen flashes, but the main thing is the audio. But you can at least watch it later and know what I'm talking about. No, I'm not crazy. I hope I didn't just link you porn. That'd be funny.
Sweet porn. Yeah, 2014. That's interesting. So it's you said it's right at the end. There's some audio?
Yeah, there's audio, and then like the screen flashes. And it like implies that BJ survived, and then
I don't know, the helicopter cue, yeah. Okay, that I remember, yeah. I when you said like it flashed, I thought like it did that thing where it Jon Snows it, and then I'm like, what? I don't remember that at all.
But no, so just like that kind of that implies he survives, and then obviously he does since you see him in the trailer for the new game. I just wish I had played through it without knowing about the sequel first.
Right.
To see what my reaction would have been, because that's just, you know, that's obviously an experience I won't have now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, Concrete for Miles is the name of the song. It's about a minute 30. But yeah, and I love the closing credits theme in the main game. And then the closing credits song for the DLC is fucking fantastic, too. Apparently it's like an old, not like folk song, but some in that vein, that genre. But the original song, it's about... It's either World War One or World War Two. I can't remember. And I think it could be one. Possibly it's probably two. About like people standing their ground from the getting invaded. But the way McGordon just ratchets it up, and he gets this guy in Australia who I guess is this really popular singer, and he teams up with him, and he does the vocals, and it's just a fucking fantastic song. It's called The Partisan. It's so good. But I'd wait to listen to it until after you beat the DLC, just because it's great at the end there. And the DLC has some of my favorite lines from any video game, from both. Both of them are from BJ Blazkowicz. Like right before it's like right at the end, this cutscene fades to black. He says something, and then right at the very end, he says another thing. It's just like it's so good. I'm like, man, I love those lines. Like up there.
Does it top the Nazi scum scene?
It's like it's an inner.
Because that scene was fantastic and I loved it.
Yeah, there's a lot of going. This is like an inner monologue thing he says, and it's so good. Like I almost want to say him, but it's like I don't want to ruin it because it fits so well with the the tone right after you beat the DLC, because the DLC is you getting the plans or the location to find Death's Head's compound, because it's a prequel. And then it, like, someone says something, there's music playing, like, that just fits the mood, and then he says these lines. It's super short, and it's just like, but it's so fucking powerful. And then I was like, man, I love that fucking line. But that DLC is real good. There's an awesome moment in that game where you're just like riding around. It's just like that mech sequence in the prison, except like you're in a city. And
that was so satisfying.
I think it's longer in the DLC. It's a bigger section, and you're like in this town. It's just so fun. But yeah, that DLC was really good. And then just a great game. I liked I'm surprised you didn't find the poster for the nightmare sequences. For the most part, I did the majority of levels. I didn't do all the levels because I don't have all the trophies, but I did do like the main ones. I think I did kill Mecha Hitler.
I don't think the trophies had anything to do with the nightmare sequences.
I thought there was one. I'm going to mute my TV so that doesn't do anything. I could have swore those trophies were like, for each level you played, you got a trophy for playing that level. But I have Wolfenstein The New Order.
I haven't gotten all the trophies yet, so there might be, but I don't remember that being them. I thought they were all like the perk trophies, and then like story trophies, basically. I don't remember any hidden ones.
Yeah, a lot of them are basically all the perks, that, you know, demolition. There's a lot of those I don't have because I didn't play that way. I could have swore there was one for the Nightmare. It might be a hidden trophy, because I am missing one hidden trophy. And
I think the hidden trophy you're probably missing is the one for saving the other dude that you didn't save the first time.
No, because they're not hidden.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, yeah, they are. Never mind. They are. I didn't think they're hidden. Yeah, I could have swore there was one for... I thought there was a trophy for playing each level. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're missing the choose to save Wyatt trophy.
Yeah, and then basically all the demolition perks, and then the top tier of a couple of ones. I don't get how... I like how I have the assault perk 8 and 6, but I don't have assault perk 7. So whatever it was, I'm just missing it. But I'm also missing 5. But yeah, I like those, at least the perks, like they made you play a different way. I like games where that unlock perks based on how you play, so it fits your playstyle better, but then incentivizes you obviously to play another way. So it's like, usually it's perks that will benefit you overall for that, like the assault packs, like or tactical perks. It's like, it might not be, you're not necessarily have to play a specific way to utilize that perk, but it still benefits you somehow. And I like games that do that. I guess there is no trophy. I thought there was one for everyone, but you can play the Nightmare, I think, 8 times, maybe 6. It's like every time you go back to the HQ, you can go into the Nightmare. But it's just so fun, because it's like, it's the full-on graphics of Wolfenstein 3D, but the gun model is the fully rendered new gun model, so it just looks so fucking weird, and it runs smooth, and it's just really funny hearing all the Nazis shout in that like bit sound, that MIDI voice they have. But you got your guns are still firing in like the full on. All the secret rooms are in the same, like it's the exact same levels, and the same music. It's just pretty funny to play.
So, I will say the biggest thing that surprised me in that game wasn't the story or anything else. It was the fact that Anya doesn't die. The entire game, they're having like these cutscene vocals of her talking, and the entire time I'm just thinking like, okay, they're clearly setting this up that she dies in the end somehow, and then she lives. I was totally caught off guard by the fact that they didn't, I can't remember what the trope is called, the woman in a fridge or something like that, when the main character is motivated by a female character's death. I thought that's what they were going to do with Anya, and then she turns out to be incredibly badass and lives the entire game, which I thought was a fantastic choice. I would have been so upset if they actually killed her.
Yeah, there's not a lot of... I mean, there are a good amount of people that do die. What did you say the trophy was called?
The trope?
I thought you said it. Oh, you said
no, the trope.
Okay, I thought you said a trophy for a second in my head. I was like,
no.
Wait.
It's, I Google it. Something like woman in a fridge.
I thought that.
Yeah, women in refrigerator. No?
I thought that trope. You're talking about like the broken man trope, where the main character of his male is motivated by the death of a woman in some capacity. Yeah. I thought that was like the broken man or something like that. But I know the concept.
Theft in the fridge. A character is killed off in a particularly gruesome manner and left to be found just to offend or insult someone. Typically a female. So.
Okay, so the same idea, but more specific. So it's like the idea of the broken man trope, but this is like a fraction of it to where not only do they die, but they die to where that character doesn't know it, and then it's super gruesome, and they stumble upon it later. That's super specific. But
it happens a ton, though.
Like, yeah, I know. It's just
it happens a ton.
It's
so,
weird to have a subcategory of a trope to break it down even further into a very specific
like a
version of that trope.
Off the top of my head, Last of Us did that with Joel's daughter dying.
Yeah, but he doesn't stumble upon her like he does in the beginning.
It's not necessarily that they like stumble upon him. It's mostly that it's just, I mean, in general terms, it's a main male character who is motivated into the storyline essentially by a female character dying, whether it's like a daughter or a wife or a girlfriend.
I would argue against the Last of Us one only because you don't pick up immediately after that happens, and everything that he does with Tommy isn't necessarily motivated by her. You don't see that. You're 20 years down the line. So it's more like the stuff he went through by losing his daughter just affects his relationship with Ellie. So I see that more like, obviously it's that trope and that aspect of his, that death defines him now, but you don't necessarily see him act in such a manner that is super reflective, because it's so far removed from that event. It's just the ripples of that for him are still there. So I feel like it's a little different, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah. But, and that's pretty much what I was expecting with Anya.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen it so many times in movies and games, I was fully expecting that with Anya, and then they start having these voiceovers with Anya where she's like, they're talking in a very somber manner about kind of like life in general, and you know, life under the Nazi regime, and it's all voiceovers by her, and I'm just sitting there thinking like, oh my god, they're gonna kill her off, and that set is gonna do something horrible to her, and then they just avoid that completely, which I am so fucking grateful they did that, because I would have been pissed off at the game if it went down that route.
Yeah, because the only gruesome people that kill is the one of your two partners in the beginning, and then the whatever timeline you choose, you'll always lose the extra swappable character, always dies. So either Jay or the woman, I forget her name now, but
Tesla.
No,
I don't remember her actual name. I just remember that she's supposed to be Tesla.
She's not really Tesla, though. I mean,
she's Nikola Tesla, man.
No,
it's Jimi Hendrix and Nikola Tesla. Her name even begins with a T and sounds like Tesla.
No, I don't think Wolfenstein, the New Order, alternate characters.
Her name is Tekla.
What is
the one dude's name is Jay. He drops acid, plays guitar, and plays the Star Spangled Banner, clearly Jimi Hendrix. And then you've got Tekla, who's obsessed with math and sees the hidden, like, it's Tesla and Jimi Hendrix.
I guess. I don't associate.
It says on the wiki.
But she.
Tesla is also a personification of a famous person, Nikola Tesla, and is an homage to him.
I guess. The way she acts in no way reminds me of Tesla. Because she's got like this split personality. She's constantly talking to herself. And she's looking at the world like everything's mathematical, happens. You can use math to find it. Like, I just don't associate that with Tesla. More like the invention stuff with Tesla and his crazy ideas for stuff. I didn't necessarily consider her as as being Tessa. At least when you, like, when you see, if you play it and you watch her talk, just the way she talks, like, in no way do I, like, I don't think if you had gotten her first, you would have, versus the guy who's Jimi Hendrix, like, I don't think he would have realized that, oh, this is Tesla, right away.
You know, probably what I mean? Not. I mean, I didn't realize Jay was Jimi Hendrix until you drop acid with him. Mm-hmm. Until then, I thought it was like just, you know, some character. But yeah, then you get that fight where he teaches you about the man, and you play guitar with him, and he is cooking up his own acid. I'm like, oh, clearly this is supposed to be Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Like, they've got all the major things of plays guitar, dropping acid against the man, doesn't want to fight, all those things. I'm like, okay, obviously this is Jimi Hendrix. Which, when I then chose to save the other dude and saw the other character and watched it, it was, okay, who is this an homage to? And I'm like, Tekla. Okay, it's Tesla.
Yeah. But yeah, she's a... I like her character. Like, her interactions with BJ Blazkowicz are pretty funny. But yeah, and then I like her the scene where she dies. But yeah, there's a... But yeah, I like how the game had... I do like that. It does that thing, though, where the choices affect... Where I didn't... The reason I also made the one choice is because I preferred the armor upgrade, or the physical upgrade, versus the armor upgrade.
Yeah, I didn't know that was an actual choice.
Yeah.
My thought was, okay, who would the old dude want me to save? He'd probably want me to save the younger kid. That was like how I chose that choice of, you know, he's lived longer. He probably would want the younger kid to be saved. I didn't realize it was health versus armor, or else I absolutely would have chose the health one, since mm-hmm. that's way more beneficial.
Yeah. But yeah, that's why I went with that choice. And I was like, I just prefer to have the health. Though they are both pretty abundant everywhere. One of my favorite things back when Wolfenstein first came out was someone made a joke image, like, because there's typically the armor is always in the form of helmets. So it was a picture of BJ Blazkowicz, but he's just covered in helmets. So it's like he's fucking like wearing like a, it's like basically a jacket, but just made out of helmets. And it looks really funny. He's like, this is what all those helmets do when they help BJ get his armor. But yeah, that game, ton of fun. So then moving on from there, then you played Horizon Zero Dawn.
I did finally play that.
Finally. And what'd you think of that one?
Probably, oh, this is a bold statement, not as good as The Witcher 3, but has more potential than The Witcher 3, in the sense that I think the future games of this series could be the best open world RPGs I've played. I loved Horizon. It surprised me in many ways. I don't know, just the world is a ton of fun. And holy fuck, it's colorful.
Yeah. It's the game's fucking gorgeous. It's
I mean, as with everything, there are things that like irked me about it, but the things that bothered me are so minuscule they don't even really matter. Like, I'll just start with we'll start with the negatives and then move on to the positives, then on a good note. The climbing in the game, I don't know whether it's because I'm colorblind or not, but I could not see the ridges that you were supposed to climb on. And every time it told me to climb something, I'd sit there for like 20 minutes running around being like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be jumping on. I don't know what the cues are that show me like,
oh, they didn't stand out to you.
No, not at all. And I don't know if that was something that most people experienced or if that was because I'm colorblind. But the ledges that were like able to climb on, I would spend time running around in circles, like jumping against every single ledge, being like, nope, not this one. Nope, not this one. Is it this one? Nope, still not this one. That drove me nuts. And then I hit the max level, and I don't know if this is what most people experience, but I hit the max level like a third of the way through the game.
Yeah, it doesn't. If you do some of the side stuff and like the... you just explore, you fight, and you do any of those challenges, you can hit top level. You get max gear super quick, and then you can hit basically the cap really fast as well.
Right, and I wish, I don't know, it's that feeling of once you get max gear and max level, it feels a bit like you aren't making progression anymore. So I wish the max level was either higher or it was slower to get there, just because, like I said, about a third of the way through the game, I kind of stopped killing a lot of the enemies because I didn't really have any reason to. I had everything I needed. Like, I had my carrying capacity for everything was upgraded. I had all the weapons. I had purple weapons, purple armor. I had lodge weapons, and I was level 50. So it was like, okay, well, you know, killing the enemies is fun, but I don't really need to, and I'd rather just get back to the story, so I'm just going to run past them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish they'd balance that out a bit better. But those were my only, like, two complaints about the game. In terms of everything the game did right, I love how even the nice responses from Aloy are fucking sarcastic as all hell. That cracked me up. The world is gorgeous, it's colorful, it's interesting, it's a world that you haven't really seen before. I mean, you've seen a ton of post-apocalyptic stories, and it's very common to have the, like, you know, ancient technology is left over, but the way it all plays out is much different, and the characterizations are much different. I liked how you had to discover the stories of what actually... Oh, I dislike that audio logs stop playing as soon as you do something else. That drove me nuts.
Do they stop playing? I didn't feel like they stopped. So
if you get, like, a vantage point or something like that, and then you, like, rappel or something, it stops playing. And I wish they would just continue playing while I'm running around, because the audio points are really interesting, but they're also long. And I don't want to just stand there listening to it. I want to be running to my next objective while listening to it.
Oh, I always stood there listening, then I looked out on the view to see both the overlay of the place and then the area around it, and I'd, like, turn the camera back and forth just kind of see it. So that one, I guess that didn't affect me, but yeah. So did you play on very hard or hard?
Yeah, I played on very hard. I play all games on the hardest difficulty I can.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. So that... Yeah, I always turn that up. But yeah, I wish there was a higher tier of armor than what they had. There should have been one up, because, like, you get that pretty fast. But yeah, I placed my control there.
Well, it's kind of the armor and the weapons. You get both of them fairly quickly. They're obviously not a huge part or point of the game of, like, getting the best stuff. And then once you do get the best weapons and armor, I mean, playing on very hard, it's obviously not really hard anymore, because... Yeah.
Well, once you learn...
Yeah, the difficulty isn't the game, it's learning the mechanics.
Right.
So once you learn the best ways to take down enemies, it becomes very simple. It's not like, you know, this enemy is always hard no matter what level you are. It's, the hard part is discovering how to kill it with lower health and then, or taking more damage. I'm not sure what they actually tweak for very hard versus the other ones. I assume you take more damage or deal less damage. But once you've discovered how to take out all of the kind of enemies and you've discovered what the better weapons are, yeah, the game loses a lot of its difficulty.
Yeah. It's like once you know what gear to use. Yeah. Well, basically it's like, I always had my weapons that I liked using, and then I basically stuck with those three on any of the creatures. Like, I always use the same weapons. I wish the Thunderjaws were more powerful, just because I love fighting them, but they're just so easy to take down. But those are they're just my favorite fights, just because they're so big.
I mean, everything's pretty easy to take down once you get into the habit of, like, okay, I knock this component off, then this component, now it's crippled. You know, now I use whatever its weaknesses, elemental weakness, and now I just unload on it.
Nah, I'm all about the rope casting. Then you ice them, and then you just fucking go at them.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, so Thunderjaws, it's, you know, take off the two disc launchers, take off the annoying, like, radar dish at the top, take off the two thing, like, the tusk things it has, and then rope cast them, and I don't know, I usually go to town with the disc launchers and kill it.
If you just rope cast and you knock off the disc launcher, then you basically just go grab it. If you want, you can ice him as well, but usually just grab that disc launcher and then you just go to town and you're done. I don't even bother shooting off like every component. The ones I always found annoying, which I never fought a whole lot of, because they're later in the game, at least if you don't encounter them until you do that portion, either quest in that area, were always the sandworm ones. Those guys are obnoxious.
The rock breakers?
Yeah.
Yeah, but those guys, if you take off all of their claws or paws or whatever you want to call them, they can't dig anymore.
Yeah, but it's like, the problem was that they have to stay above ground for me to do that. Like, usually it was always like they, for me, they always came down, did the jump up, and then go back down to the ground. Like, they would rarely stay up. And then I'm like looking around and there's two of them, and I'm like, okay, where's he going to be? Where's he going to be? And then like jumps up, and I'm like trying to get him, but I'm at a bad angle to hit their feet. And then like, then bam, they go back down. I'm like, God, I hate you guys. I'm like, you're so obnoxious. It's all about, they just never seem to stay above ground long enough. At least when I fought them, like they'd stay up a couple times. So it's like, it just wasn't enough. Or it was too far away for me to get close enough to shoot off the other side. But I didn't fight them a whole lot. And there's just that one quest and then that glitched on me. And then, a couple of those one areas, but I just ended up running past them. I'm like, I don't need to fight you guys. I'm good. But, yeah, I like the diversity in all the creatures and how each have their own unique weaknesses and attacks. And, so then it's like, if you fight a group where it's just that mix, it can overwhelm you because they got so many different attacks going on.
See, that's why I learned you just use corruption arrows or you use the warbow with corruption mods.
Oh, of course.
And then you just don't worry about it.
Yeah, and you just do that. But usually I always hated corrupting because I wanted to sneak up on as many things as I could and get that bonus damage. I didn't use a whole lot of corruption arrows. I used them later on, usually for glinthawks.
Once I hit 50, I modded out my warbow with like, I hit tier 1 with the fire and then tier 2 with the corruption so that I could light glinthawks on fire with one arrow and corrupt most things with one arrow. And I would just, I'd go into a fight, I'd corrupt everything, I'd hide in a bush, and I'd just let them kill each other because I wasn't getting experience. There was no point in like worrying about the methods I used to take them down.
Right. Yeah. Of course, then later on when you fight the, you know, all the actually corrupted things, like, well, there's no real way to, you just got to deal with these guys straight up.
But, yeah, then you have to deal with them straight up and actually kill them and use weaknesses, which was a good move, but.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely fun game. I like the combat a lot. I because I like the story more in this than I did The Witcher, just because I like sci-fi more than I like fantasy. I like this game more than I like The Witcher, just by a bit, because I prefer the combat in this game way more than The Witcher. It's kind of like,
the combat in this game is far better in every way imaginable than The Witcher.
I feel like it's way more accessible than The Witcher's got too much of that. Okay, it's like, it's got a lot of depth, but I don't want that for every fight we have to. Okay, it's a group of trolls. Okay, now I look at my troll oil to put on my weapon, make sure I got these proper runes in there. Okay, if I use these particular hexes, it's good, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there we go. I got all my stuff. Bam, let's go. And then it's like, okay, next one. Okay, now I got to apply this oil to it. Like, that's too much. I because it takes so long to do it and there's a lot of fighting. Like, I like this just quick, easy. You have your rotation of your weapons. Like, okay, I don't have to change them necessarily. I could just use the same damage and just shoot off different components. I have to know, okay, first I want to take off this to stop that attack or do this to do burst damage to everybody real quick or something.
Well, I mean, from a very simplistic point, the combat is just more fun in this because the gameplay is just tighter. I mean, The Witcher, it's a great game, and the combat is interesting, but it's not polished. I mean, nobody would say, like, the melee combat in The Witcher is the epitome of melee combat in video games. Like, no one would make that point. Mm-hmm. What I think The Witcher did better, though, is I think The Witcher has far better side quests.
Oh, yeah, of course. The Witcher blows a lot of stuff out of the water with side quests, but it's, while I love the side quests, I do prefer to have the main narrative of a game be the primary thing, because then it's a much bigger story I'm pulled in on, and I was pulled in way more into Horizons. And then you said the fun gameplay, the beautiful world. I mean, Witcher's beautiful, especially Blood and Wine is gorgeous.
Yeah, Witcher's probably equally as gorgeous, I'd say. The sunsets in that game are really nice. But yeah, I think Horizon, the main story, is probably a bit better. It's a bit simpler, and it makes a bit more sense considering it's not tied to other books, the previous games in the series, everything else. Like, it's just Horizon.
Right. And yeah, I like it a lot. It's really good. I wish they had less of the tracking quests, side quests, where it's like you just use your Echo and then go and track the purple triangles across the ground. Like, they needed fewer of those, because then that reminded me a lot of The Witcher, with using your Witcher sense to follow the blood trails. I'm like, oh, it's this again.
Right.
Like, there's a little too much of that. But
no, they needed better side quests.
Yeah, but because they brought someone on from who used to work on The Witcher to work there, right? I think they brought someone on to do side quest stuff, so maybe that's why there was so much of that.
Well, they had the monotony parts of The Witcher without the interesting story for the side quests.
The side quest for I like the one for the blood drinking guy, the mechanical blood.
Oh, I did find him, by the way.
Oh yeah, his that guy was weird. I was like, ew, I love that. And some side quests were all right, but yeah, that obviously nothing will ever touch The Witcher 3 side quests, just because they're so, even the monotonous ones that seem monotonous, it's like they just twist and turn. But I feel like they can do that because it's a fantasy setting, so they have that range to do that in that game.
You can write good stories in a sci-fi setting. It's whether you want the side quests to be, you know, each one crafted very uniquely, or whether you want more of them that kind of follow the standard trope of track this, kill.
Well, I mean,
gather these ingredients.
You can still do that, but I don't feel like you don't have as much options in Horizon, because Horizon's very much grounded. Even though it's a sci-fi game, it's not like there's sci-fi and there's magic and like, or there's this crazy tools. It's like, it's still a grounded sci-fi, if you know what I mean. Kind of like The Dark Knight, like it's a superhero movie, but it's a very grounded superhero movie. Like, I feel like, whereas The Witcher, it's like, okay, there's magic, there's alternate dimensions, there's witches, there's
right.
All this stuff. So I feel like they can get away. It's like, oh, it's, you know, can you find my husband? Oh, he's dead. Or no, he's not dead. Turns out he's a werewolf and he's cheating with this one. It's like, what are you going to do? Like, oh, go find my husband in Horizon. It's like, oh, he's not dead. It turns out he's a robot and he's a Thunderjaw. I didn't know that.
You can't do that, but the main thing I'm going to take away from that one is like your joke thing of, oh, he turns out he's cheating or something like that. They could have wrote things like that in, which would have made the stories more interesting. My point is, like, the fantasy versus sci-fi doesn't really dictate whether or not side quests are written well. You can certainly write interesting stories in whatever setting you choose to put your game. I mean, like you said, the main story in Horizon was interesting. Probably better than the main story in The Witcher. So if the main story was better, given the settings in both games, it stands to reason they could have had side quests that were better as well.
Yeah.
I mean, cauldrons were cool. They could have expanded on that. Like, they could have written more, and I understand they probably didn't have time. This is a new IP. It's the first one. They had to create the entire world for this. They just didn't have time to expand on it all, but that's not to say the side quests couldn't have been more interesting given the same setting.
They have really good side quests in Horizon, though. Some of that are really good that fit and break that mold. Like, there's the one side quest that has to do with that estate that belongs to that one guy, and it turns out he hires you to go figure out what's going on. It's been attacked by the Glinthawks, and you go there, and it turns out he's the one who put the lure there, and he's purposely killing everyone so he can take control of the estate, because he wanted it, but it went to the sister.
Oh, yeah, there are definitely some good ones. I just think, in general, Witcher had better ones.
Yeah, of course, it had better, but I feel like it's just... you can, it had so many quests too. I'm just saying, like, sure, you could have better ones in Horizon more, because then they have the one, there are some really good ones I like now. Like, I like the that guy that you take out the bandit camps with. I liked his storyline. The one where you go to the snow, and like, it's that whole village where they're all friendly with the machines, and you're like, what the heck's going on here? And you find out what that's about. That the whole storyline, those quests I thought were great. There are some really good ones, but as far as the monotony quests that Horizon has versus the monotonous ones in The Witcher, like, I just feel like that it's easier to sprinkle a little more fantasy on The Witcher side than a little bit more on the side. Like, they did that in some of the Horizon quests, but for all the basic ones, like, it's like, oh, well, this guy died because he tried to go be with his girlfriend, and then the alligators killed him, and yada yada, and you do the, okay, that's what happened here, or, you know, this, oh, there's a slave trade here, and this tribe took him, yada yada, or this guy's not paying his, the soldiers from this army are keep stealing his stuff, and he owes them money, so you gotta help him there. Like, it's pretty basic stuff, you know, that I feel like, but who knows, maybe they could, it's their first outing, maybe they can go deeper on the next round, or maybe in the DLC there'll be some more fleshed out side quests. But
so, the other takeaway from this is, I'm honestly surprised this was made by Guerrilla Games. When I think of Guerrilla Games, I know they're a AAA developer, but I don't think of, like, The Sun's Mean. I don't think of extraordinarily high-quality games. I loved Killzone 2. I thought Killzone 2 stood out. I didn't really care about Shadowfall. I didn't care about the first Killzone. Killzone 2 is basically the only Killzone I actually cared about. Other than that, I don't really consider Guerrilla to be like a major powerhouse. And then the fact that they developed Horizon, I mean, the gameplay in Killzone was a lot of fun. The story was a fucking shambles. I have no idea what the hell's going on with the story in Killzone. It just was bad. And then for them to release this game where the gameplay's good, the story's good, the world is gorgeous, the world's colorful, like, the graphics, the world is gorgeous, like, the graphics are really good, but the world itself, aside from the graphics, is just beautiful. For it to have come from the same people that made Killzone kind of shocked me.
Yeah, well, you figure, you know, you get, they've been making the same genre of games for so long that gives them a lot of time to come up with these other ideas that they can then, like, I don't know if you ever watched that, the actual interview between Neil Druckmann and Holmenhurst about Horizon, where Druckmann interviews him on it, and they talk about when they were coming up with ideas for games, and then they kind of, everybody pitches something, then they whittle it down, and Horizon's the one that ended up winning. Like, I think it was some designer there who came up with some concept pieces for it. But yeah, just it gives them more time kind of like to look at stuff and, you know, hey, we can do kind of whatever we want because we're not initially beholden to, you know, if we're, I don't know. I feel like if you know for a first-person shooter genre, yeah, you have more... you don't have as much necessarily weight into the new one as far as players going, oh, this will be great, their new IP. Like, I remember when Horizon, I loved going through the old NeoGAF threads when the art leaked for Horizon Zero Dawn, and people, where it was like Aloy essentially on top of like a T-Rex, a mechanical T-Rex back in the day. And then there's a bunch of people, and then just the people that were just trashing the game a couple years back, and it was just funny reading those comments, knowing that the game turned out super well. But you figure, you know, if you've spent so long in one genre, it's like, okay, let's do something else. You can get a lot more, I guess, passion into it to try something new.
Oh, I totally agree. I think the surprise for me is, though, if you are known for first-person shooters, you don't expect someone's first foray into an open world RPG to be so good in almost every aspect.
Yeah. I mean, and they did hire some, like I said, I would be curious whom else they hired from other game studios. Like I said, they got someone from The Witcher. I think it was for quests and open world structure stuff. I think when they hired him, I forget, that was, I remember that article came out a couple but obviously before the game came out, but that was a while back. But I think they had a couple other hires as well. So beginning to see like who they hired in to help them. And you see like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Cause this person who's worked on this thing can at least get them ideas for this. Like, hey, this in this game, this is kind of how we structured it. And maybe they could tweak it and be like, okay, well, let's try it this way. But yeah, it is, it's a sign of a good developer too. It's like, you know, if they can genre hop to something that's on the other side of the coin, and then knock it out of the park, you know, I mean, obviously not
right,
a lot of
but
people.
I didn't think they were that good of a developers before. Like, I was proven wrong. I did not think that Guerrilla Games was that good of a developer. Apparently they were, and I was just completely wrong because the game's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Also, this game changes Bethesda for me in so many ways of saying, okay, Guerrilla Games developed Horizon. The world is gorgeous. The world looks better than Fallout. I'm going to compare it to Fallout. Just, I know there's a time difference, but it's the most recent Bethesda game that kind of serves as a good comparison.
Yeah.
The world is more interesting than Fallout. The graphics are much nicer than Fallout. And then the big thing is the combat is way better. So this changes Bethesda games in a huge way for me of no longer can Bethesda be like, oh, you know, the world is so big and complex that we didn't have time to make the combat better. No, Guerrilla has essentially just shown that you can have an open world game, which was kind of the same way where, you know, the combat, while it was complex, it wasn't necessarily polished. This has kind of shown, no, you can have an open world game that has fantastic gameplay as well as good RPG elements.
Right. Yeah, I never considered the Fallout or Skyrim games to necessarily be the powerhouses. But, I mean, that's something, what you're talking about with Bethesda, that's something Collins always had brought up back when Fallout 4 first came out, how he felt like it was good. But it didn't blow him away, and because Bethesda tends to just make things in a vacuum. They're kind of like similar to kind of like how Nintendo does things from a business perspective, where they just develop their games not necessarily looking at what other people are doing and how things are evolving. They're kind of sticking, because Fallout 4 feels very much like Fallout 3 to me. It doesn't feel like a next gen Fallout. Where when I played Skyrim felt very different to me, even though it was on the same gen, versus Oblivion. Those to me, and I played both of them on the same console, those felt very different. I didn't like Oblivion, but I enjoyed Skyrim. So I feel like they just, I don't know, need to...
I feel like both of Bethesda in general with Skyrim or the next Elder Scrolls, right? Oh shit, Rockbreaker. With the next Elder Scrolls and with everything else, they really need to up their game with combat, because you now are in an area where you have The Witcher, which has brilliant side quests that blow everything in Fallout and Skyrim out of the water. You have Horizon, where it's an open world game and the combat is far better. So now you're left with saying, okay, what do Fallout and Elder Scrolls series bring to the table from Bethesda when you have other developers that have kind of done multiple things better than them?
Yeah, if Fallout didn't have VATS, I probably wouldn't play it. And then if it didn't have the perk system, I definitely wouldn't play it. So it's...
But even the last game, the perk system was panned by people.
Yeah, but Yeah, it was an interesting way they changed it. I didn't care so much that it was changed that way. I was like, yeah, whatever. But it still had VATS, and I've enjoyed VATS since Fallout 3. So that's the only reason I'll play it. I like playing Fallout. I love the VATS system. It's just fun. But if it didn't have that, I'd be like, there's no reason for me to play this. But
yeah, so I don't know. I think there are other games. I think Bethesda said that they don't have a Fallout or Elder Scrolls in development at the moment.
I thought they said they did somewhere, but I forget where that was. I'd have to go back. I was listening to a podcast, and they said something about that. But
I know at E3 they at least admitted they don't have the next Elder Scrolls in development, which I think is probably a good thing, because I think with the changing landscape recently, that's probably good, because they wouldn't be able to update their game per what has come out recently and, you know, really compete with it. Because frankly, there have been better RPGs that came out recently that make the fall, or that make Bethesda's games kind of look bad.
Yeah. Let's see, that came out in November. Because if you look at, like, the Phantom Pain came out in September, and then Fallout came out in November, it's like, and there was this just scourge of these open world games that came out, because then there's also Mad Max. You look at the Shadow of Mordor game that came out, and then there's the sequel coming out. Like, all these open world games, The Witcher 3, compared to, like, your open world game, and it's like, now it's, you know, obviously different engines, so you can do different stuff. Like, maybe you have more objects in your game with your trees and whatnot than the other. Obviously, there's minute things in the environment that can change and stuff like that, and based on your tech, and you're developing for three platforms, yada yada. But it's just, you look at them, you're like, look what these, you know, Metal Gear's on multiple platforms, and that's a gorgeous open world game with great combat.
Right, that game, the combat, so while I don't like the story of Metal Gear games, the combat from playing like Ground Zeroes and what I've played is amazing.
Man, 5 is, the open world of 5 is just so fun. I love it a lot.
While there's slightly different things in most of these games that people could argue, you know, well, oh, you know, Metal Gear, it's not just one giant open world, it's a mission structure or things like that.
But it is one giant open world.
Is it actually?
Yeah, like, you, if I could, I can load in there and, like, just go kind of drive away and do something else. I don't have to. It's just your mission. It just drops you close to where that, the section of the map where that mission is.
See, shows what I know. I haven't played it. So that supports my point even more, though, of people can claim there are different things and extenuating circumstances that prevent Bethesda from making Fallout or Elder Scrolls follow in the footsteps of recent open world games, but the fact is that's doesn't really hold that much weight. There are open world games that have done it all or have done more things better than the open world games they have released recently.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at 5, that's another case of while it's still in the same genre, it's not like Guerrilla going from first person shooter to open world RPG, third person RPG, but going from, while there was some open areas, some pretty open areas in Metal Gear Solid 4, Metal Gear Solid 5 was just, it's like, okay, it's this giant open world that you're playing in. And it's like, that's a first for the series, and he knocks it out of the park. And yeah, these games and series that has jumped, these include some other genre in them, or some particular gameplay mechanic, and it's just like they nail it. Yeah, or you look at like the Resident Evil 7, how they just totally jumped to first person, and then it's like, obviously they had an offshoot game that did first person with a Survivor, but that's so long ago and garbage. But it's like, you see them, they just, hey, let's just change still be horror, but let's just go design our game this way, knock it out of the park. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with future Fallouts and Skyrims. I mean, hopefully next Fallout at least looks better.
I don't even care about the looks. If they upgrade one thing, yeah. If they upgrade one thing, I want them to upgrade the gameplay, because Horizon has. So okay, compared to another game, Bungie is known for good gunplay.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the stories are interesting or the rest of the mechanics are interesting, Bungie has pretty much always been known for having just gunplay that feels really good. That's how I felt with Horizon, where while it's not guns, the gameplay just felt very, very good. That's what I want from open world games moving forward. I don't want a brilliant world with gameplay that just feels atrocious. I want everything now. It spoiled me.
Yeah. But it's a good game. Look forward to the DLC for Horizon. It's definitely gonna be good. But and let's see what else. Well, we've been going on for quite a while. Well, I guess we talked about those two games for a good amount. Obviously, we can talk about more about Horizon once the DLC comes out. We can talk about Wolfenstein again once you play that DLC. So there'll be more. Maybe we'll have another episode where it's just DLCs for both those games. Man, so I'm playing a lot of Dankest Dungeon on Steam.
Why do you keep calling it Dankest Dungeon?
Everybody ends up calling it Dankest Dungeon, who these podcasts I listen to, so then I keep slipping up and calling it Dankest Dungeon.
Hate people calling games by like shit like that, and then you kept calling it Dankest Dungeon?
I do. It's just it's like this Freudian slip. I keep saying it, but it's usually like when it's a game that I've known or I've played. Like if you were to call some franchise, but I've never played this game even though it's been out for a while. So it's like I didn't care. I had some interest in it, but I just never picked it up, so it didn't bother me. People call it, it's like whatever. But the one thing that bugs me about the game is I don't like the mechanic of where if I stun a mob, I still have a chance to miss them. I don't like that. I feel like if a mob is stunned, it should be 100%. It should be like a modifier on there because they're only stunned for that round. And I hate when I miss a stun creature. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, he's not moving. He's technically stunned. Is he like wobbling around with his eyes closed, covering his head, going, because he's stunned? And then I go to smack him, and he just happens to step to the left, and I miss. I'm like, no, I hate missing when they're stunned. Just that annoys me.
No, you're just stressed. It's the whole point of the game.
I got no stress.
You're missing a stationary object because you're just freaking out.
I got no stress, though. My stress is at zero. It's like I surprise them, and then I also stun them, and then I have full light. I can see them. And then they're like, nah. It's like, oh, god damn it, I hate that. But that game's a lot of fun. I like playing it. I wish I had cross-platform save between PS4 and PC, because then I would definitely pick it up on PS4 so I can get the cross-buy with Vita. Have it on Vita. I wish it was on iOS. That'd be nice. But then I could play there, because I kind of a game I wouldn't mind like doing either Let's Plays or highlight clips, especially if like I'm doing a tough fight or I accidentally get into a fight I didn't expect, and I'm just struggling to keep people alive and I lose someone. I'm like, damn it! I get pissed off. But, this game's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. I've only put like 17 hours into it, so I still got a ways to go. But, definitely a fun one.
Yeah, I never played that one. I came out like after I had just played Binding of Isaac. And I was like, I can't handle another game that's in this vein right at the moment. And now it's been relegated to the backlogs where it may or may not ever be touched.
I really like it. I picked it up on Steam only because it was on sale for super cheap because the DLC just came out. But yeah, it's really good. I like it a lot. It's got a lot of, I just, mechanically I like everything that it's doing. I'm like, this is good. Always changing up your party, you know, it's a corporate simulator. I'm constantly shuffling employees in and out because they're too stressed or because I gotta level up other guys because the guys are too high won't go run the lower level dungeons because it's too below them. It's like, motherfucker, just run the dungeon. Gotta level up my town so I can get those weapons upgraded. It's good times. Good times. I like it a lot. It's got a lot of great mechanics in it that I think are just fantastic. There's just so many systems in play. Yep. All right. Well, we should get a secret word before we go. Let's see. It's been a while because we didn't do one last weekend. Because the kid was sick. Last time we had one, though, was Red Mage. Kind of like we were talking about FF14. For the episode when we talked about E3. So we need another secret word.
I'm bad at coming up with secret words. Don't look at me.
Like Dankest Dungeon. No. We'll do Horizon since we talked about Horizon. I think we've done Horizon before. We'll just do Horizon this time because we actually talked about Horizon. So Horizon will be the secret word. There we go. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. So thank you, Isley, for joining. Thank you all for tuning in. And we will see you guys next time.
Later.